Hello and welcome to the Taskmaster podcast. It is Ed Gamble here. I am the host of the Taskmaster podcast. And here's what we're doing. We are going through Taskmaster episode by episode. We are currently on series 2. Today we'll be chatting about episode 2. We'll be drilling down into the details. We'll be chatting about the scoring. We'll be chatting about each task in order. We'll be chatting about Taskmaster memories. It's mainly about Taskmaster. You should know that from the title of it. If you didn't realise that, prob switch off now. Also, I would say, go and watch the episode we're about to talk about. Series 2, Episode 2. It is available on all four. Go and give it a little watch. And we have a very exciting special guest today. Our special guest today is the brilliant Sian Gibson. Sian Gibson, of course. No, she was not on Series 2. She was on Series 8. She is a massive Taskmaster fan. This is what we like to see on this podcast. People who know their stuff. She's been on the inside of it. She's watched the outside of it. It's going to be a really fun chat. So go away, watch Series 2, Episode 2. Or if you think you can remember it, by all means, carry on listening. And here is the brilliant Sian Gibson. Sian, welcome to the Taskmaster podcast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's very exciting.
Now, you're here, I've been assured, you are a Taskmaster super fan. Is super fan fair?
Yeah, I absolutely love the show. And especially with lockdown and it's just on all the time, it's brilliant. Yeah. It's perfect timing for it now.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying it's really... It's a bit of a tonic. It's a very soothing show just because it's so silly and it's got absolutely no agenda other than to be entertaining. I think it's really helped a lot of people.
It really has. And I think, I mean, I've loved all series apart from my own. But I do think the last series was just the best because it was just at the time, especially not taking anything away from any of the guests because they were wonderful, but it just came at exactly the right time.
Yeah. Totally. And I think you're right. All the guests were amazing, but it was just so perfectly timed that people were, it was just getting to the point where everyone was fraying slightly. Everyone's patience was going.
Yeah.
And then to be able to have a weekly thing as well, because I think with TV these days, when they drop everything all at once and you burn through it in 2 days, you can feel a bit blue after that.
And then you don't even know what it was about. I'm watching these series and I watched something the other day and I watched it in 2 days. I couldn't tell you one thing that happened in it because it's just all a blur. But it was so nice to have your Thursday nights, know what's happening. And I was proper belly laughing like never before. It was amazing.
It was a very funny series, I think, Series 10. Especially as it was clearly a group of mates by the end who were all getting on really well. But I think that's probably the case for most of the series. It felt like the case for the series you were on, Series 8. It felt like you were all pretty good buddies by the end of it.
Oh, I loved it. It's just such a weird programme, really, isn't it? That you just shove together for 5 days in studio. You haven't seen each other before then. And then you get competitive. But you're all really, is the word spurring each other, spurning?
Yeah, spurring each other on.
Spurring each other on. Me and Paul Sinner were like little grandparents at the end. We felt like the oldies at the end going, you did really well there, Paul. Well done.
Did you know any of the other contestants before you did Taskmaster?
I knew who they were, but I'd never met them. I was really scared going on to Taskmaster because I absolutely love it. But I'm not a stand-up. It does say on my Wikipedia I'm a stand-up.
Does it? Do you think that's why they booked you? Do you think they just read the
Wikipedia? Well, I think so. But I've never changed it because I quite like the idea that I am.
Well, you've got that there now, so that's always there to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
You can always live up to your own Wikipedia.
It says stand-up and impressionist. And I can only do 2 impressions. And I just think, well, I'll keep that on. But yeah, so I was booked and I'm not a stand-up. So I was quite scared because I know... And Joe Thomas wasn't either. So that made me feel a bit better. But it was quite scary. But you just lose it because Greg and Alex just just take over the show and just, yeah. It's their show and you just feel in safe hands and you don't ever feel sort of intimidated. And I don't think anyone's there to kind of one-upmanship. And I think that on every series, do you, being a stand-up, do you feel like that?
Completely. I think yeah, everyone's on the same page and everyone gets their moment as well, which is what makes it so difficult to other panel shows. You're never fighting for attention. Because you know that they're gonna come to you. You've got your tasks, and they'll ask you about your tasks, and you get the chance to shine and be yourself as well. So I think sometimes with stand-ups, you can see they're a little bit uncomfortable to start with because they can't be in control of their persona because they've been themselves and they have to just live with that.
And I think I loved. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, but I loved Johnny on the last series as well because you saw a different side to Johnny how you normally see him on panel shows or whatever.
It was nice to see that because you had all that Johnny Vegas stuff during the film tasks, like him absolutely losing his mind and having a meltdown and falling over twice, but then in the studio as well, it was, I mean, he's always had that element of pathos to his comic persona, but you really saw where that came from in the studio. I think you saw what a clearly nice man he is. Had you put Johnny onto it? Had he seen it before, or had you recommended that he go and do it?
He said he'd watch my episodes. I don't know if he did, but he said he had when it was on. I'm not sure if that's true. But then when it came in, I went, "You have to do it. You will have the most fun that you will ever have in your life on a pro." And it is the best program that I've ever done. You've got no lines that you've got to worry about. You just go in, and you can only be yourself. That's the only thing you can do. So it's easy. And I said, you'll love it. And he was a bit worried about it. And he phoned me on the first day after his first day of tasks in the house. And he was like, I've done really badly. I was like, doesn't matter. You'll just be brilliant. Anyway, by the time he'd done the studio, and obviously his was different to ours because his was COVID studio.
Yeah.
And he phoned me on the second day and he was going, it's the best job I've ever done. I'm having the best time. And I think everyone must feel that.
Yeah, no, it's so exciting because obviously I was similar to you in that I was a fan of the show before I did it. So I had all these expectations for filming the tasks and doing the studio, and it lived up to all of the expectations and smashed them. Like, it's such a brilliant show to do.
And you just, I mean, I watched loads back before I did it as well, thinking, I want to be a bit like that, and watching different contestants. But you just can't, because the panic takes over when you when you open that envelope. There's nothing you could... I bet Kenneth Branagh would study. He could study it. He wouldn't be able to do it.
No, exactly. It's the pressure. It's the pressure.
I just panicked. That's all I did for the whole time.
So when you were watching it back before you filmed the tasks, who did you have in mind when you went in to do the task? Who were you like, I want to do it a bit like that. That's the sort of contestant that I want to be.
Well, the very first episode of Taskmaster I ever saw, which made me think, what the hell is this, was Roisin on the horse doing a painting. And I thought she was amazing in it.
Yeah.
I just loved her attitude on it. But I loved Mel.
Yeah.
On it. But you just can't be like anyone, can you? You've just...
No. And that is the joy of it. It will always be a unique experience, I think. Do you have any favourite Taskmaster series or favourite Taskmaster contestants from past series?
I can't say, because you watch, as I said, with lockdown, you're rewatching things now and you forget things. So every series I watch is my favourite, apart from my own. But every series...
Why apart from your own show?
Because I can't watch it. I don't watch anything.
Really? Do you not watch... Even Taskmaster, you won't watch anything that you're in?
No.
It's very good.
I can't. but every series I watch your series. Amazing. Watch the next series. That's my favourite series. But then if I was to see yours now, I'd go, it's yours. Yeah. Every episode is just so different, isn't it? So.
Yeah, you're right. I think everyone has a moment in every episode, which is brilliant, which is great. Like, there's no, you wouldn't go, this person is the best person from this series, because everyone has a moment that makes you think that they're the best.
I know. What was your favourite?
Oh, I think you're right. I think looking back, because now this is great. I mean, I've sorted myself out the sweetest job here to be able to rewatch all of Taskmaster every week. I watched a new episode that I've not seen in a while, and it's just great. I love, I mean, we've just started doing series 2 now, And it's such a joy. It's such a welcoming back these old friends. It's really fun. So now, at the moment, series two is my favourite. So let's crack into this. Let's do this. Is series two, episode two. It's the prize task. It's trendiest item of clothing, Sian. The trendiest item of clothing. Now, yeah. I don't think, I'm going to say this at the top, I don't think anyone brought in a trendy item of clothing.
No, no one did. Although I did like Catherine's leggings.
Yeah, that was, I think that was the only thing that I thought, oh, maybe that could be considered trendy. But then I thought about it, I thought they would be trendy and fashionable on Catherine because she is fashionable.
Well, that's it with Doc. I don't know what those things, those red boots were. They were absolutely shocking, but he's a very cool person. Yeah. So you think, well, it must be cool. He could bring in some oven gloves and you'd go, yeah, they're really cool. And I'd probably go and try and buy some, but they were awful. None of them were very trendy, but what is trendy?
Yeah, because Alex said the definition of trendy was fashionable now, I guess. But then things are trendy at the time. And then they go out of trend, and then
exactly.
But the red waterproof Converse, you're right. That's exactly the sort of thing I'd see Doc Brown wearing, and I'd say, oh, they're great. Where did you get them? And he'd tell me, and I'd go and buy a pair. I put them on, and I'd go, I look like a fisherman. What am I doing?
I know. And also, just get a pair of wellies. Why do you need waterproof Converse?
Yeah, it's not a good look. On Doc, fine. I mean, the same with Catherine. Yeah. Those. Imagine Greg wearing those unicorn versus dinosaur leggings.
Or me. I'm 44. Now, Ed, what's the cutoff point of being trendy? I don't know.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's certain... I think there's trendy things you can wear after you're 35 that are trendy within your age bracket, and that's fine.
Well, I bought a pair of dungarees before lockdown.
That's okay. I think dungarees are all right.
Am I too old for dungarees?
No, you're not. I think dungarees come in cycles. I think you can get away with dungarees.
I bought them from a kid.
They're black.
Yeah. I bought them from the kids department because they were a lot cheaper. But I saw someone in London, some hipstery person, and I mean, admittedly, she was in her 20s. But yeah. I thought they look cool. And then I think, well, I'm a lot older than her. Am I allowed to do that? So I don't know what trendy is.
Well, I also have a pair of dungarees because I thought they were trendy. I've never worn them outside of the house.
I haven't!
I tend to do things where I buy things. I'm like, I'll look amazing in this. I'll be the toast of the town. And then I'll be like, it's more of an at-home thing, actually.
Well, exactly. And I think I'd go out and my friends would say to me, you look like a children's TV presenter. What are you doing? You just look ridiculous. But other people can get away with it. But I would have struggled with that task.
Yeah. Would you have brought the dungarees, or do you have anything else that you thought would have been a better item?
Well, I think at the moment, if it was now, I'd maybe take in some pyjamas.
Yes, of
because
course.
Because loungewear is all the trend.
That's the trend, isn't it? Of course.
And I've got some yellow ones with little Dalmatians in top hats. That's got to be trendy in pyjamas, isn't it?
I'm not plugged into the pyjama fashion world, but I'd assume yellow with Dalmatians is trendy. And I think you would have appealed to Greg. Greg would have probably said, I'm a very lazy man who likes lying around.
Yes.
The pyjamas, 5 points. Perhaps.
See, this is why you won, because you go into his mind.
Yeah, you've got to get into his mind.
That's where I went wrong.
So I think the pyjamas is a great idea. I mean, I think it's better than everything that they brought in on this series, because the Richard Osman's T-shirt with his face on every person.
Funny, not trendy.
Funny, not trendy, and scary. You wouldn't wear it.
No.
Imagine if he wore that in public. It'd be absolutely petrifying.
And it's also, T-shirts are a dodgy one. It's like when you see mums in school in Ramones T-shirts and you think, you don't even know who they are.
Name an album.
You can't do it.
No.
And so that's not trendy. I like Joe's tie.
Joe's tie, I think, was the closest to being trendy. I think that should have won, really.
I think if Doc put that tie on, you'd go, yes, where did you buy that? That is cutting edge.
Yeah. Poor Joe. Even when we're saying his item's the best, we're saying it would look better on another contestant.
Yeah.
I think put that with the right outfit and the right person and it would look
you'd go,
good.
Oh, retro.
Yeah, retro, cool. With Joe, you'd think, oh, for some reason you've woken up naked near a car boot sale. Now, John's cardigan with a waistcoat stitched in, which is not an item of clothing I ever knew existed.
I couldn't guess the waistcoat from that picture.
No.
So I don't even know if that existed.
So do you think he made that up? Because what a thing to try and scrabble back some points by saying,
I think
well,
he took
don't
a
think
cardigan.
It's trendy. Imagine a waistcoat stitched into it.
Yes, I do. That was my thinking because I thought, I can't see. I paused. I didn't see a little cardigan within that, a little waistcoat within that cardigan. Did you?
No, I didn't actually. I sort of took him at face value just because I thought, why would anyone make that up?
Unless they are sleeves that you can like take on and off, and that's what he means.
Oh, imagine that. I feel like if it had detachable sleeves, we would have seen that in action, surely. I think within John's fashion world, that is trendy.
I mean, again, 2020-21, that could be loungewear.
Yeah, it could be loungewear, yeah. I mean, it should stay loungewear. I don't...
The don't cardigan, go out of your house.
The cardigan with the waistcoat is not... I can't see that entering the catwalks anytime soon, to
no,
be honest.
No, and it was an awful colour, no.
Yeah, really bad.
I think we just disregard
the worst colour.
That.
Yeah, I think that should have lost, quite frankly. But it somehow got 3 points. Richard Osman got 1 point. I mean, neither of us were a fan of that.
No.
You know,
and did he make it himself?
I think he said someone made it for him.
I know, but he kind of said that and I didn't believe it. Because he said that at first. And then I thought, I wanted to know more. Who made that for him?
Right. So do you think he made himself for the show or he made it himself in just a fit of ego?
In a fit of ego, because he said, everyone gets my name wrong. So this is it. Clearly a topic he's discussed before.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, if it turns out he's made that himself, that is it. I think it's probably the end of his career, to be honest. Joe Wilkinson got 2 points. Unfair, I think. It should have been around the top.
I think that's very unfair.
Should have been 4 or 5. The tie with the lady in a car on it. John, we just said, cardigan, 3 points. Disgusting. 4 points for Catherine Ryan's leggings and 5 points, an undeserved 5 points for Doc Brown's waterproof.
Very
Converse.
Undeserved, because if Richard had brought those in, he'd have been laughed off that stage.
Of course he would have done. They look like the sort of shoes that you have to wear if there's a lot of lightning in your area.
Or Ronald McDonald would wear.
Yeah.
Just awful.
So, simple, bought my best tie. it's just the one I get most wharf whistles in.
What's the lady?
It's Marty Pam.
You've had your Auntie Pam sewn into her tie?
Yeah. It's because she lives in Norwich, miles away.
You want to see her sometimes, don't you?
Yeah.
And you want to see her underneath a small vintage car.
Yeah, she does wind me up a bit.
So let's have a look at task one of this episode. Eat the egg in the fastest time. A very simple, straightforward task to kick off the show. I mean, you say simple and straightforward. Some people made an absolute meal of it. Now, I want to know straight away, Sian, what would you have done?
I'd have panicked, which I do with every task, and I'd have
probably
ate the raw egg. But not as calmly or gracefully as Richard.
Yeah.
I'd have just been gagging and drinking it and just wouldn't have done it in a fast time. But I just wouldn't have thought of cooking it.
No, but I
would. Would you?
I would have thought of cooking it. It would have passed my mind, but it's the fastest time.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know that some, at least one other person is going to eat the raw egg straight away. So I think it would have been straight down with me.
Yeah,
I would have done
too.
It. I even wrote down, as a note here, I might have eaten it. I might have panicked like you, but eaten it straight away, including the shell, just to be safe.
Oh, because you'd have thought you'd have been in the mind of Greg and
I've
thought
been in the
that's
mind
not
of Greg.
A whole egg.
A whole. I would have thought it says eat the egg, so the shell is part of the egg, right? So you've got to get the whole thing down like a python.
You're like Rocky Balboa.
Yeah. But also, if you notice that when Richard gulped it down, they're all saying he didn't achieve full leg because some spilled out because he, you know, he tried to crack it into
he
that
little
egg cup.
He had a little tiny egg cup.
He had a little tiny egg cup, which I guess you've got to go and get a bowl or something from the kitchen, crack it into that and then drink it. But just to be safe, I probably would have taken it down with a shell.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't have. And I'd have been, I'd have taken longer to eat that egg than if I'd have fried it and just totally ruined the task. But I would have given it a good go.
I think that was what happened with Catherine, really, because she looked like she was going to eat the whole raw egg. She took a tiny sip and then decided to not eat it.
Yeah.
I think she knew that if she tried to eat it, it would have taken her so long that it would have been pointless and she still would have eaten egg.
I was surprised at Catherine on that task.
Yeah. Normally she's a bit more get stuck in
and
attack it, right?
Yeah, I was surprised. But I think you're exactly right that she thought, there's no other way of doing this. Everyone would have beaten me anyway. What is the point?
My favourite quote from Catherine in that is, I hate eating gross stuff. As if everyone else is like, oh, give me a bit of gross stuff. Yes, please. It's just like, it's not really my thing. I hate eating gross stuff. I like nice stuff. I had a lot of respect for her in that, though. She kept composure and she was like, nope, not doing it. And
she did.
A classy way of walking out of that.
She's always classy. She's always classy.
True.
And so was Joe with his little meat platter.
Surprisingly classy. Well, classy, again, within the world of Joe. So the meal he prepared involved a half crescent of sausage rolls.
And a half crescent of, like, pepperami or something, was it?
As soon as I saw that, I just thought, that's probably the crew's lunch.
Yes. Yes, it probably is with his little orange juice.
Yeah, but I mean, it was lovely.
It was lovely. I enjoyed that. I did enjoy that. He left a lot, which I wasn't happy about.
No.
But, and I think that he should have got extra points, actually. How many points did he get for that?
He only got 2 points for that because, I mean, it was on time, to be fair to him, and he took 10 minutes, 46 seconds, which is, you know, way higher than a lot of other people.
But I liked it. I did like it.
Yeah, it was just because it was on time, eat the egg in the fastest time. It was, if it was prepare the egg in the most inventive way or make a lovely egg meal, he would have got 5 points for me.
Make a lovely egg meal.
It was Doc Brown, not an egg man. Not an egg man, was very clear about that.
Yeah.
He scrambled and seasoned his eggs. Again, I have a lot of respect for that, that he was like, I'm not going to win it. Someone's going to do it quicker than me, so I'm going to season my eggs.
Oh, and he seasoned his eggs the way my husband seasons food, which really winds me up. Like, he'll just put a bit of salt on a chip or something and he'll be, like, putting it on as if he's, like, a Michelin star chef. Do you know, like, leaning over and... Do you know what I mean? That's what Doc Brown was doing. I was thinking, you're just putting a bit of pepper in a bit of scrambled egg, Doc. You know, calm yourself.
Now, I know what you mean, Sean, because I probably do it as well.
Oh, wait, what is it? It winds me up, that. Just
it just makes me feel like I'm doing something proper. I mean, as Greg pointed out, Doc Brown clearly not an egg man because he tried to break into the egg using
with his
mouth
teeth.
Like it was an apple. Awful like effort.
Who said an egg-hungry whore? It was one of my favourite...
It was John. It was John who made the point that he was going to have the egg raw, but a lot of it went on the table and he wasn't going to slurp it off the table like an egg-hungry whore.
I get it.
And I loved that because you could see the sentence form in his mind and his brain saying, don't say that out loud, and then his mouth did it before he could stop himself. he scrambled them in the microwave, which, no, he lost a lot of respect for me there.
Yeah, I do that for my dog.
Scrambled eggs in the microwave?
Yeah.
Your dog has scrambled eggs?
Oh, yeah, yeah. On a weekend, which, you know, is all the time now. She likes a bit of scrambled egg and ham.
I love that your dog is the only dog in the country that has a notion of brunch.
Oh, only microwaved. It's only microwaved.
Does that make a difference, then? Is it better for dogs to scramble them in the microwave?
No, it's just quicker.
Yeah, I suppose if you're at the point where you're getting a pan out for a dog, you're like, this has gone too far now.
And I'm putting, like, seasoning on as well.
Really leaning over it. Getting
really leaning
in.
Over, yeah. Like, Doc.
Of course, Richard gulped it down, but he did leave a lot of egg on the table. I don't agree that's valid and he should have been disqualified. That's where I'm at with it.
He was a bit cocky, wasn't he, with his cup of tea?
Were you told that as well? I was told this specifically. Feel free to bring your cup of tea, or you can bring your coffee with you when you come and do a task.
Just very relaxed.
Yeah. But I was never... I don't need any distractions.
I was never relaxed enough. It took enough for me to get through that plastic door, let alone have a cup of tea in my hand.
That is scary, that bit, isn't it? Because you never know what's going to be behind there, because you're waiting outside the door for them to call you in.
You never know what to do. It's like stars in the night. You walk through that door and you're just like, hi. And you're just looking at everyone thinking, what am I going to do next?
And or because they genuinely don't tell you what's coming up or give you any clue as to what's coming up. I always found that going into them or beforehand, like you'd see the producer or you'd see the director or you'd see Alex or even just the cameraman as well, who would just look at you like they knew what was coming, because they obviously did, and sort of smile coquettishly or like in a guarded way. And you're like, oh no, what is it? Because they all seem like they think I'm about to make a fool out of myself.
Which is probably right, but yeah. I also found that, I mean, Alex would tell you this, I was the most indecisive contestant ever, and just paranoid that I'd every task, when I'd finish it, I'd go, oh my God, what did Lou do? We can't tell you. Obviously, they don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
And I'd go, oh my God, should I have done this? Did you think I did that? Should I have done this? Would it have been better if I'd have put the sand in the bucket? And they're like, we can't tell you anything. Well, now I've done it. How did everyone else do it? We can't tell you. You have to watch it on the live show. And I didn't believe that until I was on the show, that they hadn't seen the footage before. Do you know, like when you're on the stage and they show you, oh, and this is what Joe Brand has done. I didn't believe that is the first time you'd seen it. I kind of just thought everyone would talk about it.
Yeah, because I guess there is that element of television sometimes where things aren't as they seem on screen. There's production behind the scenes where people are slightly more in on things and they're less improvised than they're presented to be. But yeah, Taskmaster, they really stick to those rules. You're not allowed to know what's coming up, and it has to be a real reaction.
But I think it works because your reactions are real on stage, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure.
I went when I was doing my tasks. I was booked in to go to a different location. You know when you have the different locations.
Yes.
And I was at the NTA Awards and I saw Paul Sinner and I'd heard that he was on the show. But now everyone's always so secretive about who's on and whatever.
Yeah.
And I went up to him and I was like, "Oh hi, I think we're doing the same pro." And he looked at me like didn't have a clue who I was. It was just he was being papped. Was having his photo taken. I went, "I'm going tomorrow, but I'm going to a secret location." He went, "Yeah, it's at a railway bridge." And I was and I was like, "Okay, right, I'll see you in a few weeks." And he was just like, not arsed at all.
He was probably trying to keep that sort of spy thing going of like, we can't be seen to be interacting with each other. People have put two and two together and realised that we're both doing Taskmaster.
I think he was.
Bless him. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I actually think the railway bridge in your series is probably my favourite extra location that Taskmaster have ever done. What a beautiful, amazing place.
I know. It was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. And one of my favourite tasks as well.
Yeah, I think that goes down as one of the best tasks ever, the sneaking up on Alex task.
And again, it's one of those that you think this is easy.
Yeah.
When they just so hard. I was absolutely terrible at it.
Especially if you're Lou getting in a bin.
But then I thought, why didn't I get in a bin?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Well, I might not be the fastest, but I'm the only one who seasoned his egg.
Oh! Peri-peri salt. I mean, if a task's worth doing, it's worth enjoying, right?
Task two. This is what I'd not seen in ages. I was very happy to watch this one back. Make the best music video for a nursery rhyme.
Oh, amazing.
It's so
I
good.
Loved this task. John.
Yeah, it's John, isn't it?
He was the winner for me.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
It really, I think as well, it really revealed the darkness of Three Blind Mice.
Yeah, it did. Well, or just... He could have done anything and just sat in a blonde wig at the end and done that smile and anything would have looked quite dark, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, true. And the first frame of the blood and everyone being like, I know where this is going. And then you see John and you're like, oh, I actually didn't know where it was going at all.
No, that's taken me worse than it could ever possibly have gone.
Poor old Catherine mistakenly thought that she had to write and compose her own nursery
but she
rhyme.
Did very well, I thought.
It was pretty incredible, I thought. I didn't know she played piano. That was a strange
I wouldn't have been able to do what she did. She was brilliant.
And animated it. It was pretty incredible, actually. I mean, I wasn't sure. The message of it was weird. And it didn't feel like a nursery rhyme to me. It felt more like a sort of educational cartoon.
Yeah. But still very good. Better than Richard's.
Richard's was the worst one, wasn't it? Let's be honest. Oh, well, it's between Richard and Joe for the worst ones. But Richard's, I just thought, coming around the mountain in the style of Verve's Bittersweet Symphony, it's not exactly the most up-to-date parody.
But it isn't, because I never got that it was the Verve at all. I just thought it was a middle-aged man having a breakdown, walking across a garden, because at one point he got in the side of a van to just walk out the back door of the van. I thought, what was the point of that? Because it didn't look very elegant. And then he just got in a shed. And he sang, if you're going to sing, I can't sing, just give it your all. He was just like not arsed, was he? Just plodding along, just knocking people about. he was my worst one.
That's what he does when he arrives at set anyway. They just happen to have the cameras on that day.
Just knocking everyone about.
You know, that's what he's like on Pointless, apparently. He's just straight in, cuffs Alexander Armstrong around the head.
Well, he's very tall, isn't he? Can't help
huge.
Himself.
Docs. Now, Docs, I think about a lot because I think it's great. I think it's so good. Just the swearing, just the occasional swearing in Once I Caught a Fish Alive, and the punching of the salmon. I think
punching a fish.
What a joyous thing to do! I absolutely
punching a fish. He was, but again, he's very cool, isn't he, Doc?
Yeah, I mean that's where he's probably wearing those rubber Converse. That's probably where they came in handy.
Well, I thought he had him on his hands at the start. He had these big red gloves on, and I thought, has he got his Converse on his hands? What's he doing? Very clever, though.
Yeah, to be able to do that. I mean, that's when people really like the acting thing. When people actually use their skill that they've got, it always blows me away. Now, Joe, I mean, it's not a good version of Old
McDonald's. No, but he can do anything and he'd make me laugh.
True.
And you expected that of Joe.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing Alex covered in cotton wool balls.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
It's very sweet.
He's born to be a little sheep.
So he was better than Richard for me. I sound like I've got a vendetta against Richard. I haven't.
No, but I think that was a very
rubbish video.
I think he was better than Richard here. Because I think people should also be rewarded for operating within their own vibes. So Joe absolutely did the best with the personality he was given.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
He couldn't make, if he made more of an effort, it'd be weird, wouldn't it? If he was
it would be scarier than John in a wig.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine Joe singing Twinkle Twinkle. Absolutely terrifying.
But he only got 1 point. I think you want to swap round him and Richard, really.
Definitely.
It should be one point for Richard, 2 points for Joe, James the Dirty Two, 3 points, and then joint 5 points, Doc Brown and John Richardson, which I think seems fair. Although you seem to be such a big fan of John's. Do you think he should
I prefer John's, personally, because I'm not a fan of hip-hop.
You're not a fan of hip-hop?
Was that hip-hop? I'm not a fan of rapping.
That was hip-hop. I wouldn't call that. That shouldn't be your entry into the genre of hip-hop.
I mean,
You shouldn't be exploring more based off Doc Brown's Once I Caught a Fish Alive rap where he punches a salmon.
But that's what he does as well, isn't he? But
yes.
I mean, it's not my favourite music. So I didn't understand it. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe I didn't get it.
But so a genre of music you do enjoy is instrumental nursery rhymes that end with Northern comedians in blonde wigs.
Something I can sing along to. That's what I like.
It's so weird.
The funny thing is, I'd already filmed that before the test.
I've written down three things as I was watching it: nightmarish, creepy, and then strangely attractive.
So, task three. Task three is an interesting one because when I remembered this one, I assumed it was a prize task because it doesn't feel like a
task. It seems like a prize task.
So it's using this camera to take a picture of an inanimate object that looks like you. Closest resemblance wins. It definitely feels like a prize task. It's certainly, I don't think they would do this as a main task in the show now. It sort of reminds me a bit of the buy a present for the Taskmaster
task. Yes. Yes, it does. Very quick. I wouldn't have had a clue with this one, as again.
Would you not? Is there nothing that popped into your mind straight away? You thought, well, I'll definitely take a pic. I'd take a picture of that.
I'd have probably either taken a picture of a troll. Those little tiny, not like the, a big fat.
The pencil like, ones.
The little ones that you put on a pencil.
Yeah.
Or I'd have probably just done something really naff, like got a corkscrew and put some hair on it or something. What? Something really shit.
Why? Okay, got a couple of questions now, Sian. Why do you think you look like one of the trolls that you put at the end of pencils? Because I'm talking to you now and your hair is not stuck straight up in the air.
Well, I've brushed it.
So naturally your hair sits up in a vertical fashion.
Well, but if I was doing a headstand, okay. I'd look like one.
So in the studio, let's play this through. You'd bring in your picture and say, this looks like me, this is the troll from the end of a pencil with its sticky up hair. And Greg says, well, that doesn't look like you. Your hair's flat. And then you say, no, it's not. And would you do a headstand in the studio then? To prove?
I'd have a go.
Yeah.
I'd have a good go at it. An ex-boyfriend once said I look like a troll.
Oh, God. Right. Well, that's a good way of doing it. I think Greg would give you points based on that tragic story.
So I think that's stuck in my head.
Oh, no. You don't look like one of the trolls from the end of a pencil, Sian.
Thank you. Or I'd bring a corkscrew, flip the arms up and put some hair on it. I don't know, that's rubbish, isn't it? What would you
that's
do?
That's quite rubbish because, again, you don't have like a twizzly metal body.
So that's what you think.
That's true.
What about you? What would you take?
It's difficult because I get compared to a lot of other people because I look like a sort of very boring sort of this sort. I mean,
who?
You know, in like a computer game where you get like a character and you're allowed to customize it. I look like the character before you've added any customization to it.
Well, so I maybe think that's a compliment.
Maybe I'd take a picture of one of those, or just like a mannequin with no features. I don't know. You'd have to go hunting, wouldn't you? This is one that I'd agonize over for a long time.
Yeah.
Whereas I think most of these contestants didn't agonise about it at all, especially Richard, who I think he must have known immediately what he was going to go with. He was going to go with the guy on the eye protection sign because it is undeniable and it is brilliant.
He's had that conversation before.
Yeah,
this was
definitely
an easy task for him. He was like, yep, I know that. Which is why, and I love her, I don't think Catherine's is an inanimate, I can't even say the word, inanimate?
Inanimate.
Inanimate.
You bailed out before the end there, Sean.
Inanimate.
Inanimate.
I don't think she's one of those objects.
The
Spanx lady.
Of a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess within the definition of inanimate, it's not animated, it's not moving. But I see what you mean. It feels like a cheat because it's a representation of a person.
Yeah, with long blonde hair.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, she didn't do that well. It doesn't really look like her, as far as I can work out. It's just a blonde lady.
And it is the boobs, when Greg said about the boobs.
The low,
very low slung, yeah.
Low slung boobs. We never saw the whole picture. I wanted them to zoom out and show exactly what was going on there.
Yes, well, it would just be a lady in Spanx, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. But, I don't think that was the great one. And I think this whole task... Maybe it was a prize task, and maybe they made it a task because Joe's story about the toaster was just so fabulous that is why they need to keep it in, because that made the whole task for me.
Yeah, just... the toaster with a big punch hole in the side.
Yes, because you can imagine it happening.
Yeah, you really can. What Joe is spectacular at is everything he says is within his persona, and you can imagine his life being like that. Of course he punches the toaster if it only browns on one side.
Of course he does.
While he's making one of his weird egg meals with a semi-crescent of sausage rolls.
It was brilliant. And I think it was worth the task of the anemone.
Yeah.
Of that object. for the sake of Joe punching a toaster.
What was Joe going for there? Was he going for the reflection looking like him?
I don't know. I didn't get it.
No, I didn't get it either. I can't even remember if he said that, whether he said, oh, this, because it's the reflection, which is quite, you could take a picture of a mirror, which is an inanimate object that happens to have your reflection
on.
So
yes,
then the object
would
look like you. And I thought that's what Joe was going for, but unfortunately there was a big punch hole in the toaster and it only had, it didn't have,
and he was looking up.
Yeah.
In a weird way. But I think that's better than John's.
Yes,
because
that
was
better
just
than John's.
That I could have just taken a photo.
Yeah.
Just because it's 3D, it yeah. doesn't mean that it's any better than just a photo of me on holiday last year.
But there you go. That's another good idea, just to bring a photo. That's the object, and it does look like you. And but John's didn't. It didn't look like him that much.
No, it didn't. He looked very old. He looked like an aged John, because he was just all grey in his cardigan, just.
With his waistcoat sewn in.
Or not.
I think he overthought it in that he was so excited to have access to a 3D printer that he thought, of course it's definitely going to win. But it didn't really look like him, which no one said. No one mentioned that it didn't look like him at all. So maybe in the room it looks like John.
Yeah,
but certainly
maybe.
To us it didn't. But that got 4 points. Doc Brown's doll of Marvin Humes went down quite badly, but I don't think it was that terrible.
I would have, if I had a doll that looked like me, I'd have taken a doll. Well, I would have. Yeah. I'd have taken a troll.
You'd taken the troll doll.
I thought that was a good one. And who doesn't want to look like JLS?
Yes, exactly. I mean, yeah, I don't think it was too bad. I mean, Catherine called him out for racism.
Well, and I think that's why we moved on.
Yeah.
I think that's why they never went and pressed it any further and just went on to the next person, because we were like...
Catherine accused him of saying that two black men look similar. And then, the conversation was moved on very swiftly, which is probably why I only got 1 point, because it was not examined too much further. So it was 1 point for the Marvin Humes doll, 2 points for the punch toaster, which is probably where it belongs, to be honest, because I don't know what Joe was going for. We loved the story, but it didn't stick to the task. Catherine Ryan's Spanx lady got 3 points. 3D printout, 4 points. Do we think that should have been lower, shouldn't it?
No.
The Richard Osman eye protection sign gets a well-deserved 5 points.
Is that your toaster with a punch in it?
Yeah, it's a de-stressor.
No, I'm not going to let it go. Why has your toaster got a big punch hole in it?
Because sometimes it only browns it on one side.
Task four is... Wait, this is mad, this task. Order the following pizza for the taskmaster. Extra large, vegetarian, with pepperoni, bacon, no cheese and tomato. You must not say extra large pizza, pepperoni, bacon, cheese, tomato. You get a bonus point if the person taking the order says bubbles. How would you feel about this, John?
I'd have loved this one.
Really?
I'd have loved this task. I'd have been terrible at it, but I'd have loved it. And also... when they say at the end about the bubbles bit, and Joe just says, can you just say bubbles?
Yeah.
And they say it, just genius.
Yeah, it is genius, because I think a lot of people assumed that you weren't allowed to say bubbles, but it doesn't say that in the task.
No. I'd have loved this task. I think it's brilliant. I wouldn't know where to start. Would you have done this one?
I tell you what, I would have found it really difficult. I don't think I'm necessarily that good on the phone. And also, I don't think I've ordered food over the phone for about 5 years because of apps. So I've not had to call and make an order for food for ages. And I'd be absolutely ashamed to call for a takeaway now, because I order so much. At least on an app, it's faceless and you can just click, 80 boxes and then wait and then pretend there's extra people in the house when it arrives.
Exactly.
Over the phone, no, really hard.
Richard was so polite.
He was. He was so polite, and he did a bit of pretending, which I thought was a bit of a genius move, where he pretended that he was surrounded by annoying people who kept changing the order, so he could be the apologetic one.
But it made no sense, because just because people were noisy, why don't you know the word for cheese?
Well, at least he could pretend he was a bit distracted, or, Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah. I've never been in a party that's so loud I've forgotten the word pizza.
That it was so loud but deadly silent.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's loads of people here. Of course there is. Are they the people who got you your T-shirt, Richard? I don't think they were they?
He's always blaming imaginary people, is Richard Osman. He made no mistakes. He absolutely, like, aced the challenge. But both of both pizzas, he got two pizzas, and they were both wrong. But, you know, so this is the thing about this task. Let's say this now before we discuss other people's efforts. The points seem to be based on what arrived. So Richard got 1 point. But surely, because they were all different pizza places, it should be based on whether you completed the task. It's what you order is the task, not what arrived, because it's then you're leaving up to the human error of the person who's taken the order.
Yeah, because what if they just sent you a kebab?
Yeah, exactly. Madness. It should be based on what you actually say. So that's a big issue for me in this task, Sean.
Well, did you find in your series, when I started, I wasn't very competitive. I was like, oh, it's just lovely to be here, having a lovely time. Then as you went on, Greg's marking.
Yeah.
Seething inside of things like, I've 2 points for that prize task. And just absolutely livid.
Yeah, I definitely had moments like that. But then also...
I mean, you won.
I won, so you can't complain. I was kind of happy with a lot of the scoring, to be honest. Okay, so yeah, Richard, I think, should have had 5 points because he got the order right. Joe and Doc both did that thing where they did all that work not saying the words. And when the person said the word, they repeated it back to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, pizza, that's right. Oh, shit.
So frustrating.
So devastating.
I thought Joe handled it very well.
One mistake. He must have said pizza. He got the bubbles, like you say, just in a genius way. Could you just say bubbles for me? And the guy said, bubbles? No. Refused to do it after he'd done it. So it was 5 points for Joe based on what arrived.
I love how Catherine said... I don't live in this country. What did she say? I'm not English. I don't speak English.
I don't speak English. Yeah, as if there'd be holes in her fluent language that included everything that you needed to order what she wanted. How would you do it, Sean? How would you describe cheese, for example, without saying cheese?
I might say, I've thought about this. I might say I don't eat dairy.
Yes, that's good.
So can you put anything non-dairy on it and then take things off from that?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, using a dietary requirement is probably quite a good way of doing it. Because I think for me, maybe the cheese and tomato thing is the hardest thing to ask for, because who has a pizza without cheese and tomato?
Yeah, and how do you describe a tomato? A tomato is just...
Yeah.
I don't want that big red thing on it.
I don't want any red sauce, I guess. I think someone did. And I think it might have been Richard who said, do you do any other sauce bases? So I think got a barbecue sauce base, which is another good way of doing it, I think. But still, I mean, I'll be honest. When I watch this task back and talking about it now, I really want a pizza.
I could eat a pizza now.
Yeah. And just to let the listener know, it's 10 past 11 in the morning.
Well, I nearly had a gin. But then I was worried that because I'm on Zoom with you, that someone might call social services because it's 10 o'clock.
Hello, I just spoke to you. I just placed an order.
Yes, madam.
I don't want the pie to have the stuff on it that melts. You know, I forget the word for this as well. I'm not from England. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
So it is studio task time. Were the studio tasks something that you look forward to? Did you enjoy the studio tasks?
I did. I did enjoy the studio tasks. I never did well in any of the studio tasks. I'm not very... I always think, even though they're not sporty, I'm not very physical.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I remember week one, we had a task about eating donuts that were on like a washing line thing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And no one had thought, I'm 5 foot. I had a disadvantage.
Yeah,
Lou was gobbling away.
Yeah.
having a great time. I got whiplash. This task is like a nightmare scenario situation.
So using the big chopsticks, get these potatoes into the basket. You must only hold the chopsticks on the grips provided. The big chopsticks alone may touch the potatoes. Whoever gets the most in the basket after 100 seconds wins.
Bad dream.
Yeah, would height come into play here as well?
No, it just feels like a bad dream that, like, you're eating but it's not going in your mouth, or you're running and not going anywhere. It feels like that kind of scenario to me.
Yeah, the big chopsticks thing. Yeah, it is a bit like a nightmare where suddenly you've been shrunk and you've...
Yeah, like a little borrower.
Yeah, like a borrower eating ramen. Yeah, very, very tricky. Richard straight away cheats. I don't know, he loses his mind. He just, like, he's not listened to the task. He picks up the potatoes and puts them onto the chopsticks and then puts them in the basket. If you could do that, just pick the potatoes up and put them in the basket, Richard.
I know. But when I watched it, I thought, good for you. I thought that is a great way to do it, because the others were stressing me out just watching them.
Yeah. But they, because they're trying to do
it properly,
sticks
together.
Right?
I know. And then I like Joe with his snooker vibe of, like,
yeah,
trying to pop
great.
Them. That was great.
Yeah, really good. I mean, I think Joe, his reaction to even potatoes being in the vicinity, it was like he was having flashbacks to the previous episode, because, of course, there was... The potato throw incident, the legendary potato throw incident, was in episode one
that
of this series.
That goes down in history.
Yeah, so he's obviously now scarred by potatoes forever.
So he handled it very well.
As always, Joe handled it very well. I mean, the studio tasks are fun, but I've always felt there was an added level of pressure because there was the audience there. And I think I'm similar to you in that I'm not a sort of sporty person. I am competitive, but quite often I don't have the manual dexterity to be able to do these things.
No, and it's just too much pressure. Yeah. And it was things like when they are physical as well, it's just bringing every flashback of school sports day back to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You might as well just get me to do, like, egg and spoon race across the stage.
Well, that's something they definitely would do as well. So it is a victory for John in this episode, a very strong competitor, John. 25 points for him, 19 points for Catherine Ryan, 18 points for Doc Brown, 15 points for Richard Osman, and 13 points for Joe Wilkinson, bottom of the episode, which is a place he became very comfortable with over the series and ended up there, and that puts John in the lead in the series with 43 points, looking like a good competitor at this stage. It's a strong lineup, this, and it feels immediately more competitive than series one did.
Yes, it did. One just seemed like an experiment.
Yes,
don't you
exactly
think?
Exactly. And then they found what was great about it.
Yeah.
And really focused on that. No, you're right, absolutely.
And I didn't care who won in one. It was just like, oh, let's just watch these people having a laugh and making a fool of themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas you get to two and you do start taking sides,
yeah,
and you do start getting, well, that's ridiculous, he should have had 4 points for that. And really getting into it. But I think you're right. I think two is when it starts changing. But definitely, yeah, Greg has got a lot stricter with the marking.
Yeah, he has. And I think that's at the request of a lot of people, the general public as well, really tend to get at him and tell him he needs to be stricter with his scoring. But then he goes really strict and everyone's upset about that as well.
Yeah.
We got some emails now, Sian, from our fine listenership. Question for Sian. Have you ever experienced a more awkward moment than when you and Joe Thomas met for the team task? Were you as surprised as you seemed when he walked through the door? From Sarah in Nottingham. I mean, this really sticks in my memory as a particularly awkward Taskmaster moment.
Well, what happened was, I kind of knew at some point you would have that surprise of me, because you know, I watched the series, so I knew that, yeah, I'd be teamed up with someone. I wasn't expecting it that day. I don't know why it was such a surprise. But also, as I don't know Joe, and I've only ever seen him on telly, and I didn't know how he'd react to me, because I'm a bit of a hugger.
Sure.
I'd have loved to have run across and hugged him, but he just looked like he was just thinking, don't come near me. I could see it in his eyes. And I just thought, I don't quite know what to do in this situation. And yeah. You also think, is this part of a task? Because I don't know about you, Ed, but as soon as you step into that house, you don't know if it's a task. When someone asks you if you want a cup of tea, is this a task? Are you judging what, is this going to come in later? I judged absolutely everything. So I was thinking, is this part of it? Does he know I was here? So he's being casual because he knew I was here? Or is he as shocked as I am? I don't know. I just didn't know what to do.
So at that point, you thought Joe's personality might have been part of the task?
Yes, you just don't know. You've just got to second guess everything. But I thought maybe he knew I was here, so he's just being casual. Or maybe he doesn't like me and doesn't want to hug me. Do I hug? I don't know. I just didn't think it would be on camera.
Especially with Joe, I think, because I've known Joe for a long, long time. And I love watching people meet Joe Thomas for the first time. I'd say that's in my top five hobbies of people meeting Joe Thomas for the first time. And I'm so happy they got that on camera with you, because he's such a lovely man, but a real unique personality. Has his eyes shut a lot of the time. Just has a weird way of thinking about things. And exactly, I know exactly what you mean. He walked in and you were like, hang on, why is he being like this?
So was it quite a normal reaction that I gave then?
Oh, a fully normal reaction.
Oh, God.
No, don't you worry. I think you were always the normal one in the room with Joe Thomas.
he was brilliant, and he got so into the tasks.
Yeah.
Like we had like the creative tasks with Joe where we had to do a an album cover.
Yes.
Joe was amazing and so into it.
Yeah,
and then another week he'll bring a grape into a prize class because he's just not asked and not thought about it.
This is from Alan in Bolton. He says, in the apologise to Alex task, your initial question is, what can I do with a poo? You ended up sending a naked selfie of Alex, but what was your original idea involving a poo? Love the podcast, Alan from Bolton.
Again, panic, Alan, that as soon as I read the task out, I panic and think, what can I do?
Yeah.
And I thought, if you're going to do something really bad to someone, surely it involves a poo. Yeah. I did think about trying to find, not my own poo, trying to find a dog poo and putting it in his car. putting it on the car seat. But the producers talked me out of that one.
Oh, really? Did they have to talk you out of it? They very rarely do talk anyone out of anything, but it turns out you found the line by putting dog feces in Alex's car.
Well, it is taking it a bit too far, isn't it? But that was actually one of my favourite tasks as well, because we got a picture of Alex, and it wasn't him naked, obviously, because I've not taken a picture of Alex naked, and sent it to Greg. And Greg was doing the Royal Variety at the time. But Alex's face, he was just mortified. He was truly, truly mortified. Because I'd sent this picture to Greg saying, come to Mama. And Greg was in the middle of rehearsing or actually doing the Royal Variety at the time. So I don't think he took it very well. Well, I think he took it well, but I just thought...
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't
a bit
impressed.
Busy, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it got a better reaction if he was just sat at home or something. And Alex seemed properly worried, which made me laugh even more.
Yeah, of course.
But I was also quite worried about me that I'd never met Greg before as well. And then my first time I met him, I was worried about that, thinking, have I ruined your Royal Variety experience by sending you a picture of Alex naked? But it was a very flattering picture, and he should have been proud.
He should have been. But Alex is, you know, he gets embarrassed. He gets embarrassed easily. Again, he's another not-hugger. He doesn't really like a hug, does Alex?
No, and a few times I asked him to help me in tasks where I'd ask him to help me down off something.
Yeah.
And it felt a bit awkward doing the whole get-me-down hug kind of thing.
Maybe that's the thing. Both him and Joe went to Cambridge University. Maybe that's when you arrive at Cambridge University, you're told, no hugging, no hugging. You should be learning. Right. If you've got time to hug, you've got time to read.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. This is a good question from Chris in Cheshire. If you could choose an additional teammate from any series of Taskmaster to join you and Joe, who would it be and why?
Well, I'd like to have poached Lou.
Yes.
From the other team.
You don't need to stick within your series.
But in my series, I'd have liked to have poached Lou. And I think she'd have had a nicer time with me and Joe than she did with Ian and Paul.
There would have been less clashes, certainly. I think Ian and Paul would be fine just sort of beavering along, sniping at each other.
I think that would have been better. Lou would have had a lovely time with us because we were very relaxed about everything.
Yeah.
I'd probably go... Johnny Vegas, just because he's a good friend of mine. He's a really good friend of mine. And I'd probably poach him because he's very good at creative.
Yes, he is. He is excellent at that sort of thing. And also, I think it's always helpful to have someone you know knew before on a team.
Yes.
Because you've already got that shared language. You can chat to each other and you know exactly what's going on.
Because if Johnny walked into the room, I'd hug him and he wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
There'd have been none of that awkwardness.
But then Joe would have been even more awkward when two people went to hug him. Oh no. Now, Sian, we always ask everyone who comes on the Taskmaster podcast to rate their experience on the podcast between 1 and 5 points, as is the way of Taskmaster. Could you now please give me a point score for how you have enjoyed the Taskmaster podcast?
I'm going to give it a strong 5, Ed.
A strong 5, not just a normal 5.
I'm not messing about. I'm not doing Greg scoring here.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not thinking too much about it, but I've had a lovely time.
Oh, it's been so much fun. And even without the gin, you've had a good time and it's still a 5.
Well, that's a lesson for us all to learn, isn't it? You don't need gin to do a Zoom call. That's what I'm going to take away from today.
Me too. Although now, as well as a pizza, I do want a gin. So I'm going to have to deal with that situation. Thank you very much for coming on the Taskmaster
Thank
podcast.
Thank you, Ed. And good luck with the Champion of Champions.
Thank you very much. There we are. Another episode of the Taskmaster podcast done. Thank you very much, Sian, for coming on. Very much enjoyed that chat. Always nice to speak to a fellow TM nerd. That's what we're called. Keep those emails coming in, by the way, for our future guests. We've got a lot coming up. Literally, however many episodes of Taskmaster there are, we've got all them coming up. Can you imagine that? I'm looking at the producer now. She looks tired thinking about it. There's a lot of episodes to come. I'm very excited. The producer really needs to pull her socks up, though. But I can't wait. And we'll probably have Sian back on, I'm sure. By the time we get around to Series 8, we'll want to hear her insights into her own series. Do email, though, taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com with all your questions and queries. Email for a specific guest that you would like to see on the Taskmaster podcast. Email a question for them. Chances are we'll probably have a chat to them and I'll get to ask them your question, or send me a general Taskmaster inquiry, one specific for me. Maybe just say hello, something like that. It's always nice to get emails in the inbox. And we'll be back next week to discuss Series 2, Episode 3 with our brilliant guest, Ben Bailey-Smith, a.k.a. Doc Brown. You can't send any emails for him. It's been recorded already. So sorry about that. Let me tell you, it's an absolute belter. So watch those episodes on all four. Come back and listen to the Taskmaster podcast again, and we will see you sometime soon. Goodbye.